powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
The Seattle Seahawks are 2-4 and facing what feels like a must-win game against the Saints on Monday night. Here to help us preview that one and take a look around the rest of the NFL is The Ringer's Danny Kelly on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Danny, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're good. We're good. I mean, a tough day overall, looking back on a couple different sports in the state of Washington, as you know. But looking at just the Seahawks to start this one off, the start to the season is one of the worst I can remember in the last 10 years, easily. I've appreciated your circus big top as you rate the craziness of the season. Where are you at right now?
You know, I think the expectations have been lowered significantly with the Russell Wilson injury. You know, it's one of those things where if Wilson was in, I think there'd still be certainly a hope that they could kind of dig themselves out of this hole. But, you know, with the backup quarterback in and the defense in the shape that it is right now, it's just not looking good. You know what I mean? It's not one of those things that looks like they can really dig themselves out of at this point, just based on, you know, their remaining schedule and what they've done. If they would have beaten the Steelers, I think there would have been quite a bit more hope, but it did just kind of feel like, okay, that's the end of that, more or less, when they lost to the Steelers.
Now, that's the end of that, is that you're referring to their playoff hopes? Are you referring to, you know, ultimately, you know, the expectations of who they could be offensively? Where exactly is that thought process, Danny?
I think, you know, there is an outside shot that they could still make the playoffs. Obviously, there's more games this year. There's one more game, and then there's more teams in the playoffs, obviously. So I was kind of looking at their schedule. You know, they have like a pretty legit chance at like a 9-8 finish. If they can steal a couple games against good teams, maybe a little bit better. But I just generally think, you know, with Russell Wilson out, it just really kind of limits what they could do. Like, I don't know, it's just they have to get lucky with injuries or something like that if they're going to beat teams like the Packers, Cardinals going forward, the Rams. And they still have two games against the Cardinals who are red hot. So I don't know. It's just not looking great for them right now. So that's just kind of how I feel. I think going forward, like bigger picture too, it kind of like changes the situation, because if the Seahawks are not a playoff team this year, I do kind of feel like it makes the Russell Wilson situation much more interesting going forward. Like, there could be a bigger chance that they kind of just end up deciding to get divorced or whatever and moving in different directions.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking at, is kind of the big implications of the season is, like, you have teams that have been wildly successful over the past decade. I mean, the team that the Seahawks are going to face this weekend or this Monday night, right? The Saints. The Saints are in there. The Steelers are in there as teams that have had the same franchise quarterback. I know Drew Brees isn't there anymore, but the same franchise guy, same head coach, and have had some 500 seasons or maybe some below 500 seasons. So it's not like having a season at 500 or below is very weird or whatever. I think you would have expected that eventually for the Seahawks, but in a way that it didn't feel with some of those other teams, it now feels like that is the end of the marriage between Carroll and Russell.
Yeah, and I think it's not necessarily – I think you're absolutely right. Like, there's going to be down seasons with any of these any of these relationships between coach and quarterback and all that. But, like, I still think with the – it feels like a divergence of philosophy and how they want to go about winning and all that. You know, with Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll, that's long established. And this year almost feels like just the – I guess the nail in the coffin, maybe not the right word, but it just kind of feels like it solidifies that – discord that they have there. You know, Pete Carroll talking about how he wants to get back to the run and all that stuff. I think that, you know, is very clearly what he's going to always believe, and that he's never going to come off of that. And I keep coming back to the Tom Brady thing, honestly. Like, Russell Wilson watching Tom Brady just light it up in Tampa Bay, you know, going from a team like the Patriots where he couldn't, I think Brady couldn't really be himself. He's come out of his shell a little bit and everything is different now. Like, I think Russell's probably looking at it and being like, look, I could still rejuvenate the second half of my career. I could get Super Bowls if I'm on a team that's building around me and allowing me to have a say in all the personnel decisions, all that. I'm not saying the Seahawks aren't doing that necessarily, but I'm saying I think that's probably how he sees it, if that makes any sense. I think that's how Russell Wilson will see it. And so it's going to be interesting, really, what happens going forward here. And it's not like the Seahawks defense is really giving Russell Wilson a lot of motivation to stick around. You know, the way that the Seahawks have built the defense over the last few years and maintained it, it's just like this is one of the worst defenses in the NFL. And I don't know if that's just not going to have much of an effect for Russell Wilson going forward either. So all those things combined, it just this injury is like could be potentially catastrophic for that relationship.
I want to talk about the defense in 1 second, but what are your thoughts about Pete Carroll's desire to get back to the run?
I mean, I think honestly, it makes sense in this scenario and in this situation, you know, with Geno Smith at quarterback and we saw how well they were able to run the ball in the second half, which honestly was a pretty big surprise to me. I'm not sure if that's something that they can continue to do going forward or not. And I think they absolutely should try to, because this is a team that, you know, you're not going to win airing it out with Geno Smith, probably, I would say. You know, it's just not like something that's going to be consistent going forward. So getting back to a ball control offense where they're limiting the amount of possessions that the opposing team can get. They're trying to like get lucky here and there with like the way the ball bounces, hopefully get a turnover here. This is like the way that Pete Carroll was winning early on when you had like Tavares Jackson under center. This actually reminds me a lot of like that type of offense where, you know, you're trying to shorten the game, limit the game, get a couple turnovers, protect the football, and hope that all works out for you. Hope it like just, you know, the other team makes a mistake essentially. So I think it does make sense going forward for this team. When Russell Wilson comes back, I guess that'll be kind of like the big question. But, you know, overall, I was just looking at the Seahawks' third down conversion rate, you know, even not just this year, but going back years. And I think even if they are able to get the run game going, like continually, like consistently trying to lean on third down conversions just doesn't really feel like a good way to approach it. I know that's kind of like what Pete Carroll has always been saying, but Seahawks were 3 of 12 on third down last week. They're 30th this year in third down conversion rate. They're 27th last year. So, like, I don't know, like, why is this, like, such a big focus in your offense is converting on third down? Like, you clearly suck at it. So, I don't know. I'm just kind of, like, frustrated overall, which is, like, the Seahawks' direction and their strategy. But I think in this case, like, wrapping it all together, like, they do need to probably lean on the run, because I don't think if you're leaning on Geno Smith to, like, carry the offense, it's probably – it's just going to be too many turnovers and things like that.
Yeah, and I fully agree with you, and that's honestly where we're at right now, is that if you're going this week by week, there's no question that you do need to lean on the running game. The problem becomes, or the interesting situation becomes, this is who you are. You are making definitive, declarative statements as to this is what you're going to do, and you're going into this next game against Monday night against the Saints, who are the number two rush defense in the league, Danny. Do you think the Saints are for real in that aspect, or is it the fact that when you look at their schedule, you know, hey, they've played the Packers, who, I mean, they smoked and surprised them week one, and after that it was the Panthers, the Patriots, Giants, Washington, you know, not necessarily murderer's row here. Are you buying that the Saints are that dominant defensively?
I mean, I don't know if dominant is the word I would use, but I think they're good. Like right now, they're number two in rush defense DVOA, and that accounts for strength of schedule and opponent and all that. So like they're clearly very good. And I think that, you know, that they're very talented up front. I think they've been good like in that area for years, and I think it's not like a fluke. So yeah, I would say they seem legit in that front, and it's going to be an issue for the Seahawks. I don't know if what happened last week in the second half, like why the run blocking all of a sudden kind of came alive. They were opening up big holes. They're getting explosive runs. I'm a little bit worried, to be honest, if that was just sort of like a small sample thing, and it's going to be much tougher sledding going forward. And again, kind of getting back to what I was saying with the third down thing, like if they're not doing well on first and second down, if they're not creating these big 8 yard runs on first down, 11 yard runs, like they're ripping off really big runs against the Steelers in the second half, which, obviously, if you can do that, continue to do that for as long as it's going to work. I think that's a great plan. Like, honestly, keep doing that. I have no problem with that. The problem is when you start getting stuffed on first down and you're getting yourself into second and nine, second and 10, and then you're running again, you're getting into second or third and five. And going back to what I was saying about third down, like they've historically just been a terrible third down team, you know, whether that's with Russell Wilson or Geno Smith at quarterback. So I don't know why that would be sort of like the game plan going forward, even when Russell Wilson comes back, because I just think like if they can't, you know, I don't know. I just, the whole idea of like leaning on that and depending on that run game is a little bit worrisome to me going forward, especially once Russell Wilson comes back, because I just think you get yourself into these third and long situations and it's more often than not going to work out.
Danny, defensively, you know, this group, as you mentioned and highlighted, that they have been brutal. I mean, so much to the point where Sunday Night Football, I mean, took a big shot at this defense, from talking about the Legion of Boom to calling them the Legion of Boo. And I know it's play on words, it's Halloween, but
they,
like,
they didn't use Halloween graphics, which is upsetting.
They didn't. And it was a shot. I mean, if you're within that building, if you're Pete Carroll, Ken Norton Jr., any of those players, I mean, that's got to be a feeling that you haven't had in quite some time. I mean, what is your overall thoughts of this defense, Danny, and what they've done over the last two seasons?
I mean, I think it's just a matter of, honestly, if you look at like their drafting over the last few years, and you can probably include Jamal Adams' trade in that, because now they've given up last year's first rounder, next year's first rounder, which is on track to be like a top 10 pick. Hopefully not. Hopefully that's not what happens. But, you know, the draft, the capital that they've sunk into the defense hasn't really paid off, hasn't panned out. I was pretty excited, honestly, about like the defensive front that we had going into the season, like with, you know, Carlos Dunlap, he's an aging veteran, but he still, you know, makes some flash plays. Kerry Hyder, I was kind of excited about that. Those two guys haven't really done much this year. Benson Mayoa hasn't done a whole lot. The excitement I had over the pass rush group has really faded after the first, like, 6 weeks or whatever, and so that's kind of been a disappointment. You know, I have really liked what I've seen from Daryl Taylor, so that's, like, a silver lining, but I think just overall the pass rush has not come together. And I would say, you know, obviously the Jamal Adams situation remains sort of like the big question mark for the defense going forward. And I think, you know, honestly, I think he's a good player. I think he can be a big impact player and provide energy for the defense, but it still feels like they're feeling out like the best way to utilize him and what he does best. And I was rewatching the game earlier today, and it just kind of struck me, like, he failed to make two plays that directly resulted in 10 points. For the Steelers, he dropped what could have been an interception close in towards the goal line. I believe it was in the first half. And then that led to a touchdown. Like, the next play was a touchdown for the Steelers. And then he had one doink off his face mask later in the game, and that was a field goal. So, like, I want to believe that they can turn Jamal Adams into a player that's worth being paid the most money at his position and worth two first-round picks that it took to get him. But I'm just having a really tough time buying that so far. You know what I mean? And so they need to figure out a way to get him going, really. And whether that means him just playing him around the line of scrimmage where he's more comfortable, or making him rush the passer more often, or what, I don't really know what the answer is. But I think they're still trying to find that answer.
Yeah, lots of fascinating stuff, too, from this final question with you. And I know we're going to have to kick you off, Danny, but it's been a pleasure to talk to you. But Jake and I are going to continue this conversation later. He is the Ringer's Danny Kelly. Danny, thanks so much.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Danny.
All right. It is time for Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
Always fun talking to Danny. Can't wait to jump back into that conversation later. We'll go to this first down, though. Who has to step up for Pete Carroll's run-first approach to come alive this weekend?
This is all on the offensive line. It's not on a running back. It's not on a quarterback. It's not on DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett. This is 100% on the offensive line if they're going to win this game and be successful in the running game. And here in cut number five, Ray Roberts was talking about, you know, kind of the issues that he saw early on with this offensive line. And quite frankly, the things that Ray Roberts is talking about, you hope are figured out.
I will say the players are good offensive linemen, but they haven't played as a good offensive line yet. Just watching the film and just watching their technique, some of them was rusty with the technique. The meshes, like on the double teams and the run game, wasn't like real sharp. The switching of line stunts in the passing game, the guys on different levels, which makes that really difficult. And a lot of that stuff comes with the timing that it takes to get to know the guy beside you and be able to work together as one unit, but you didn't have the preseason reps. And so now they're trying to work themselves into that space during the season, and then also off to a rough start.
So when you talk about that, I mean, some of the early issues that happen, yeah, you could say that it's chemistry issues, that, hey, you know, you moved over Damian Lewis to left guard, you had Gabe Jackson there at right guard and still working together and trying to figure it out. You have a new center in Kyle Fuller. But ultimately, to me, this comes down to, have they figured out, was the second half of that Pittsburgh game that spark, that change in this offensive line that they needed to now they can be that dominant front, that dominant group that can take it to anybody in the league. Doesn't matter what your stats are coming into it, and we're going to have a great test of that against the New Orleans Saints, and those are going to be the guys that are going to get this done and open the holes for guys like Alex Collins, open the holes for Rashad Penny, Travis Homer, and DJ Dallas. Alex Collins is a good running back, but as I said before, he's not a creator at the line of scrimmage. He's not a guy who's going to make you right when you are wrong. And the big reason why this running game was so successful against the Pittsburgh Steelers, they were assignment sound, they worked well together, and I'm telling you, they opened up giant hole after giant hole, and they're going to have to do it again.
Second down. Should the Seahawks have done more to try to pick up Whitney Mercilus? I should include here that it was the Green Bay Packers that signed Mercilus today, just a few minutes ago.
Yeah. I don't think that on paper, Whitney Mercilus would have worked out here in Seattle. The reason why I say that is because Whitney Mercilus is more of an outside linebacker in a 3-4 scheme. Now, you could easily come back at me and say, well, Jake, what about watching Benson Mayoa have to drop back into coverage? Wouldn't you want a guy that can rush the passer and be good in that area and also have a background in being able to drop into coverage and be more sound and be more savvy in that situation than Benson Mayoa? The answer to that is touche. Like, anytime that you have an opportunity, he's 31 years old as well. So, again, it's not somebody who's young, but you're talking about hiring him for 1 year or for the rest of the season or seeing how these next couple games go. I don't know, man. I think that anybody that's generating 3 sacks in 6 games and not really being a full-time starter is somebody that I'm definitely interested in, somebody that you were able to make work like Carlos Dunlap a season ago, and right now you're not getting any production from any of your guys outside of Daryl Taylor on a consistent basis. So, yeah, I think Whitney Mercilus was somebody that they should have looked into, but I'm just telling you that difference, being an outside 3-4 linebacker versus being a true rush defensive end was probably a big reason why they were not a part of that conversation.
Third down. All right. Mark Jackson's in this conversation. Kyler Murray's in this conversation. You could throw Derrick Henry in this conversation, maybe. Who do you believe is the MVP of the NFL right now?
Stacey, I'm going with the person that you mentioned last. Derrick Henry, to me, is my MVP of the NFL, and it's not even close. I mean, everybody knows going into the week that Derrick Henry is the guy that you have to stop. We knew that when the Seahawks were playing the Tennessee Titans, and guess what? You couldn't stop him. At some point, he broke free. At some point, he was able to wear that team down and have a major, major impact on the game. Derrick Henry is the number one reason why the Tennessee Titans are 4-2, and it's not even close. I mean, get this. 6 games. In 6 games. 783 yards. He's almost rushed for over 1,000 yards at this point. 783 yards, 4.8 yards per carry, and 10 total touchdowns. We're not even halfway through the season. I mean, this guy is putting up bonker numbers. It's crazy, and I know that this has turned into like a quarterback trophy, the MVP, but man, if there was ever a year, if he keeps this production up, there's ever a year to give it to somebody else other than a quarterback, I would definitely put my vote towards Derrick Henry.
Especially for a running back that's like regularly coming into contact with guys. Derrick Henry, for as much as he bulldozes through people, was the only starting running back last year to finish with 16 games. To start 16 games. He was the only one with over 1,000 yards to do that. So of the regular runners, of the guys that are getting the primary carries on a team, everyone missed at least one game. Except for Derrick Henry, who might be the most physical guy of them all. It's crazy what he's able to do. A fourth down. All right, like I said, Seahawks facing off against the Saints. Could be an opportunity for the defense here. So what are two things you hope to see from Seattle's defense?
Well, anytime you play against Jameis Winston, I know he's turned things around. He has done so much better in the turnover to interception ratio. That LASIK eye surgery, Stacey, did wonders for him. He's throwing 12 touchdowns to 3 interceptions right now, but he has coughed up some fumbles as well. And Jameis Winston, he just has those turnover tendencies. And so what I want to see, number one, is I want to see the defense create and cause turnovers, multiple turnovers, not just one, but multiple, whether that's in through a fumble or in an interception. I think there's opportunities to be had in this game. The second thing that I want to see, and I believe it's really important, is, yes, the pass rush is a focus that we really talked about and hit on all day yesterday, and that is a big part of it. But I really want to see Trey Brown, your fourth-round rookie, continue to shine. It was great to see him in the limited action and the limited role that he had against Pittsburgh, you know, play extremely well, come up with some big plays. But I want to see that continue. I want to see him to continue to stack together good performances and let that confidence soar. And if you can walk away from this season having two corners that you feel very confident in, man, that would be a big win, because as of right now, Trey Brown is the only guy that you have on this roster right now at the cornerback position that is signed to remain and stay with this team after this season. So you got to have something going for you and on that front. And Trey Brown playing well, playing big, and solidifying himself as a starter for this team, a legit starter, man, that would be great news.
Yeah, you definitely got to win the turnover battle against this team. The Saints had 7 takeaways in the first 3 weeks of the season and gave the ball away just twice. So 2 turnovers, 7 takeaways in the first 3 weeks of the season. They're 3-3 in the last 2 weeks. So that's gone down to 3 takeaways, which is still good in the last 2 games, but 3 turnovers in the last 3 games. So that turnover differential popping a little back closer to 0 for them. It is not. They're still pretty good there, but you've seen them kind of leveling out a little bit. So you'd certainly like to get some takeaways there for the defense. You're right, Jake. Coming up in the timeline, Karl-Anthony Towns has a very interesting pregame ritual. And plus, Climate Pledge Arena, we're all really excited to go. We're very eager to see the crack in there. But I'm going to give you a warning about some of those food and drink prices that's coming your way next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own Twitter timelines. And that usually means that they're kind of weird or maybe a little bit funny, just something that's trending in the world of sports. In case you missed it and you're opening up Twitter, you're opening up the interwebs, as my mother would say, and you're seeing some random thing trending like Karl-Anthony Towns, and you're thinking, why is Karl-Anthony Towns trending? It's the same reaction I have when I open Twitter and I see Betty White's trending. All of us, our heart stops for a minute, and then we realize it's because she's in a new commercial or she's done something else that's just completely adorable. Well, Karl-Anthony Towns actually is trending, and here's why. He has a very interesting pregame ritual that involves watching videos of gorilla fights.
For me, I've really just been watching 2 gorillas fight before every game. I've been addicted to that. I want to see what's the best in the nature of wild.
YouTube video?
That's mine. I'm watching gorillas fight all day, because I know at the end of the day, if I'm the gorilla in that video, I'm leaving out alive.
Makes sense. Jake, what's your weirdest pregame ritual? What was your weirdest pregame ritual? Because I think athletes are very paranoid. Particular people, like professional athletes, are exceptionally paranoid.
Did he say at the end that if he is one of those gorillas, that he would become?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm buying that, but hey, sure, whatever you want to think, whatever you want to tell yourself to get yourself pumped up. Hey, I'm all for it. I've seen weird rituals, like, you know, guys getting pumped up. I've also, the weird thing that I've never understood is how guys can be so calm before a game. Being around people, like not listening to music or anything, just kind of walking around.
I get it.
And, oh, you do?
Yeah.
I don't at all.
Well, yeah, because you have nervous Whippet Greyhound energy. Like, have you ever seen, like, I used to dog sit for this Whippet, and it always had to go for a walk, and she was always shaking, and always, she was at an 8 and no lower at all times. That is you.
Yes, that is me.
Your energy level is never lower than an 8.
That is also the majority of athletes as they're about to enter a competition. They're doing something to get themselves in the zone or pumped up. I mean, I'm talking about people that are just walking around like, yeah, okay, all right, we're about to do this. Or I even had a few teammates of mine that would take naps before the game. Like,
oh,
legit straight up naps.
No.
And then they'd wake up and they'd get ready to go. And
it's like
and
Nelson
get out
Cruz
there.
Does that.
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, I wake up. My wife makes fun of me all the time. I am a horrible napper, not because I can't nap, but because I fall into a incredible deep sleep.
Yes.
And then it takes me 45 minutes to wake up. Like, don't talk to me until I have fully woken up, because I am very grumpy and out of it when I wake up from a nap.
So in that moment, Brooke has four children.
Yeah, basically.
Shout out to Brooke. I don't know how, really what I don't get is how anyone's stomach couldn't be in knots. And maybe that's what just does it for you sometimes. It's like, hey, I'm just going to watch videos of this and I'm going to channel these two gorillas fighting with each other. And I'm going to have that level of energy for this one. I don't know. Whatever.
My all-time favorite, though, is John Henderson, old defensive tackle for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who would have somebody slap him, have one of his trainers slap him across the face. Slap him across the face as hard as he possibly can. I'm sure we have the sound somewhere. In our show, because I know we've played it before. But, oh, man, I used to watch that and think to myself, there's no way I could play.
I mean, it worked. Guy. John Henderson was really good.
Yeah, he was 6'7", 350 pounds plus, too. And just this little trainer slapping him across the face as hard as he possibly can.
All right, next story here. If you're seeing DeJuan Smoot trending on your timeline, or maybe the Jags, it has nothing to do with Urban Meyer this time around. Instead, it has to do with Smoot himself, who obviously a defensive end for the Jags. Actually, I'm going to backtrack. I'm going to tell you the ending last. At 4 a.m. the other day, he and his wife, his heavily pregnant wife, are leaving the home. She's going into labor at this moment. They're leaving the home at 4 a.m. They are heading out the door. And at that moment, his wife falls down and he has to catch her. And she goes into labor right there. They don't even make it out of the living room. He delivers their own daughter in the home at 4 a.m.
Boy.
Shout out to DeJuan Smoot, who is... Father of the Week.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I can't even.
What a guy.
What a guy. So, and also, what?
Smoot had to be on the phone with paramedics, obviously, during all this. I would be freaking out. And so paramedics walked him through all of it, including tying the umbilical cord and all of that over the phone. So, like, he's on the phone with paramedics, and they're telling him, like, okay, you want to tie this and you want to do all this.
I mean, is this their first kid?
I'm not sure.
I mean, after
yes, their first child.
Okay,
I was gonna say, because if there were two other kids or one other kid in the house, hearing that commotion, one kid would definitely wander out and be like, "Daddy,
yeah, definitely.
Is everything okay?
For sure,
yeah." Get back to bed.
Can I just getting a lot of praise, but shout out to his wife, for delivering this child in her living room without any kind of painkillers or medication.
Yeah. And I mean, just crazy. I mean, it's scary. It's really legit scary. But I was also very different in the delivery room my first time versus my second and third. Second and third, it was like, okay, I know what to do. I'm much more. I'm better. You know, in terms of being there for Brooke and knowing what to do and what to say, what not to say. The first time around, when it happens, like, it's just. Man, that's a lot. You're scared. You're worried for her. You want everything to be okay. And then not just that, but it's game time. You've got to deliver this baby. I mean, shout out to him.
When Willow was born, Brennan started having contractions in the middle of the night, like 3 a.m. And she was kind of like, I think I might be going into labor. And I was like, really? And then, we were like, how long should we wait to see before we can go? And her mom was staying with us too at the time. And we were like, should we go now? And she's like, I think you should go. And sure enough, and then Willow was born super quick. She was...
Like, you guys got there, and Willow was like, I am here, let's do this.
We got to the hospital at like 3:30. Willow was born at like 6:30, 7 a.m. Yeah, so thankfully we didn't wait around much longer. That We could have had a very similar situation.
Wow.
All right, next up here, for everyone who's going to watch the Kraken in their home opener, a little bit of a heads up about prices, drink prices at Climate Pledge Arena. Now, Curtis was horrified by this. He said that drink prices are absolutely insane. I actually think they're pretty on par with T-Mobile Park, to me.
Well, let's talk about the prices here.
Well, I'm getting the prices. I'm pulling them up right now. So a hard seltzer, so like... the Topo Chico, or I didn't see a White Claw, anything like a White Claw or whatever, what have you.
Stacy's out.
San Juan Seltzer.
Bougie.
That's right.
Yeah. Then there, it's $16.
Jeez.
Just seems like so, how do you?
I've spent that before.
It doesn't surprise me.
Oh, I got a San Juan Seltzer at T-Mobile. Spent
and then your craft
on
beers,
it. Not
$16 for a 16-ounce can.
Oh, man.
You've got
I just think these are not that weird.
$14 for a premium can.
That's not that weird to me.
$7 for a soda.
$7. Soda. I mean, but you're right. It is on par with T-Mobile Park. It is on par with the rest of it. So it is insane, and it also is a great reminder of, you know, hey, eat before you go. Eat before you go, or else you're going to be paying big time money.
Well, then what happens if I get there and I want a hard seltzer? I can't bring it in with me.
It's true. You got no choice.
Yeah. You wait till after the show is done. Go support a local business.
Curtis is not having it. He is not
Maybe
having
I'm
it.
Maybe I'm very dad-like.
That's
right
you
now,
right now.
Right?
You're
it's
becoming
like, how
very
much money
dad-like.
Can we save here?
Yeah.
$16 exactly bucks right for a hard
Do
seltzer?
Do you take coupons? Coupons?
Miss me entirely with
buy
those.
Buy two, get one, or what's going on here? All right, that is the timeline on Jake and Stacey. This hour
Curtis
brought to you
bringing
by
out the
Schuch
fanny
Casino.
Pack at the thing.
Trying to sneak in snacks.
Wear a big puffy coat. It's like 80 degrees outside.
A single goldfish falls out as you walk in. Oh, no,
I don't know what that's from.
Oh, that's weird. We talked to Greg Wyshynski of ESPN earlier about the Kraken, taking a look at any early concerns. And while the three of us, Jake, me, and Greg, agreed it was way too early to panic, there are some concerns that people have about this team. So you can have every faith and all faith in the world that they're going to get it figured out. But we're going to take a look at what's worth being worried about and what's way too early to look at and get panicked. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Not the easiest start to the season for the Seattle Kraken, and that's not to say, though, that there's any reason to panic. However, we had a conversation with NHL senior writer Greg Wyshynski earlier on the show. If you missed that one, make sure you check it out on the Jake and Stacey podcast. It's in the midway through the first hour. It's wherever you download your podcast, Apple, Spotify, or on 710sports.com. And Greg said, look, it is too early to panic about this team, but so far, you're still trying to figure out what this team is. His analogy, a very Kraken-esque, a very fitting analogy, was they're a little less like a Kraken and a little more like a jellyfish, kind of still trying to figure out where they're being molded, right? Still very, very malleable, but maybe not in the best way possible. Because they've not been really stout defensively, and they've not been great with goaltending, which was kind of going to be the calling card for this team on paper based on the expansion draft and based on any other acquisition. So instead, what you're looking at, though, is a team with three losses, one game that was sent into overtime. What I'll say that's making the case for not panicking is that three of those games were pretty competitive. You have the Flyers game, which was they were just blown out 6-1. But you've got obviously the loss to Vegas, which I thought was a great showing. They have a win over the Preds that following Thursday. And then they have an overtime loss and a loss to the New Jersey Devils last night, where it was 3-2 Devils until the final like minute 30 with an open goal net for them. So I'm going to count that also as a competitive game, even though Seattle was trailing. They had a chance there to at least tie it up. So it's not like they're being blown out with the exception of that game against Philly. You also had Yanni Gourde, who's their frontline center, who played his very first game. He has played one game with this team. John Buchagross told us it could take until December to figure out who this team really is. And I'll add on that these guys were all drafted in July and have had just 3-4 months of working together in a sport where chemistry is one of the most important things you can have. I say all that and it sounds like I'm making a lot of excuses. And really what I'm doing is kind of making whatever the opposite of a devil's advocate argument is for why there's no reason to panic yet. And there's never a reason to panic this early into the season. But it is fair to me for people to be looking at this team saying, okay, who are you? Who are you as a team? I'm figuring you out. We knew you wouldn't be this great team offensively, but are you a great team defensively? I'm figuring out who you are right now.
Okay. You look at the other part of it is one of their, veteran, forwards as well. As Marshawn Lynch called him, the boy Cali.
Cali.
Yeah, Cali Yarncroc. He hasn't played yet this season either. So you talk about another veteran player that you were hoping to rely on. He hasn't been out there as well. So this is definitely, as you're going through the beginning part of the season, it's not the start that you would have loved to have had or have seen. And I'm not even talking about in the win-loss column. It's the fact that you have people and analysts and writers, as we had Greg Wyshynski on, just looking at it and saying, I don't know what this team is right now, because they're not even close to replicating what we were anticipating them being, right? So that's no surprise. As you're looking at this and you're seeing the results and you're seeing this, you're going, okay, you're feeling really good about the goaltending. You're feeling really good about the defense. So these should be at least low-scoring affairs. And that hasn't really been the case yet. And the only thing that I can draw to at this point is that, Stacey, you talk about them being excuses. I don't really feel they're excuses. I think they're legit things that are happening. This team is still trying to figure out who they are, how to play together, be at full strength. They have yet to have been that for an extended period of time, and that's going to take time. The Vegas Knights set up the Kraken for unrealistic expectations, I believe. It doesn't mean that they can't be a playoff team, but I also believe in terms of how successful they should be out right out of the gate. And we have to allow some mistakes here. We have to allow the Kraken to feel this whole process out, you know, from the coaches to the leadership, for them to really, you know, solidify who they're going to be. Now, are you going to allow that to continue to keep going on all the way to the December? No, you've got to be better, and you've got to shore things up here sooner rather than later to give yourself the chance to be a playoff team. But the other thing that Greg Wyshynski also said that I really liked was, no matter what in this situation, doesn't mean that you don't want them to win, doesn't mean you don't want them to go to the playoffs, doesn't mean you don't want them to compete and maybe surprise everybody and win a Stanley Cup, is the idea that if they're not the group that everybody thought they were in the preseason, it's okay. They're still building. But what you want to see is that there is a clear defined identity. There's a clear defined way of how they're going to grow and how they're going to continue to keep building upon what this season means, this inaugural season. But still, it's way too early to try and take moral victories and to be panning out, you know, hey, how they're going to use this season to propel them forward. Right now, it's about how quickly can they figure each other out and play together on the ice, Stacey, so that they can win games and make themselves a legit competitive playoff team.
All right, we know what an NHL expert thinks, and Greg Wyshynski. Let's see what the players think. Yanni Gord said that he thought they responded well last night. So again, they were trailing down by two by the end of the first period, pretty ugly. In the second, they respond with a goal, and in the third, they respond with a goal, that one from Jared McCann on a power play, to make it 3-2. And again, that final goal came on an empty net. So they had a chance there to tie it up. Here's Yanni Gord.
I think we responded pretty well, especially in the third. We attacked. We didn't have that sit-back mentality. We attacked the play. We played north. We didn't have as many turnovers. We were more efficient on our forecheck, and it's all like things that we can build on. And I think we look at the positive, and then we're going to go from there. We got a couple of good practices in front of us, and then the home game. So that's where our focus is at.
Now, what I also want to hear about is the perspective from their 38-year-old captain. He's been around this game for a long time, and he had an interesting takeaway on what he thinks might be happening with this team.
Well, I liked tonight. I liked the fight and the pushback from the guys. I think we're guilty a little bit of having guys care too much, where you start squeezing it and overthinking it because you don't want to be the guy to make the mistake. And we got a lot of, like I said, a lot of guys who really care in that room. You can tell by the way we compete together and communicate with each other. We just got to clean up a few areas, and I think we will. I think we have the players to do it.
I know it sounds like Giordano is in on a job interview when they're like, what's your weakness? And you're like, sometimes I just try too hard. Sometimes I'm like too good at my job. Like, it sounds like that's what he's doing, but it's not. I think it's actually a really good point. This expansion franchise that's five games ever into its very first season and didn't know who it would be offensively is going to have guys that are trying to force things. It's going to have guys that are trying to make things work and trying to, be hero a little bit and figure things out. They don't know each other quite well. So again, it's going to take a while to figure this team out. But it'll be fascinating in the meantime to get insight from guys like Greg Wyshynski and obviously from the players. All right, we are going to take a look around the Pac-12 next. Obviously, that starts with Wazoo, the latest with Rolovich, but we're going to take a look at the Huskies also and then a bit at the Pac-12 South with Yogi Roth of Pac-12 Networks. He joins us next.